Welcome to the Homeschool Show for North Carolinians for Home Education. Our goal is to help you homeschool with confidence and joy. I'm your host, Matthew McDill, and today we're bringing the show from the Coffee Mill in Lewisville, North Carolina. We have a great show today. In Homeschool News, we're going to tell you when the Thrive website webpage is going to be updated. We're going to let you know about the NCHE Day with the Charlotte Hornets. And also, we're going to talk about the family from Germany whose status here in the U.S. has been in question recently. In Homeschool Conversations, we're going to talk with Brian Ray, again, from the National Home Education Research Institute. We're going to discuss the definition of homeschooling and how that's changing and the changing landscape of homeschooling and how all that fits together. Very interesting. We're going to talk in Wisdom from the Word about submission. This is not a very popular topic, but it's something the Bible calls us to. When is the right time to submit? We know we're supposed to lead and we're supposed to fight, but when should we submit? We'll talk about that and how to teach your children that. And with Homeschool Helps with Amanda, she's going to talk about mental health challenges. What an important topic, not very often talked about. And she's going to give some helpful tips on how to handle that in a homeschool context. Okay, starting off with Homeschool News, we're excited to let you know that the Thrive webpage will be updated for the 2024 conference by this Tuesday. So you're going to be able to see who all the featured speakers will be and a lot of the other new details that will be updated. You want to mark your calendars from May 23 through 25. That's going to be the 2024 conference, and make sure that you are going to be there. Another great announcement for news is that the NCHE Day with the Charlotte Hornets is going to be coming up in January. Now, in the past, a lot of times it's been kind of over Christmas break, more like in December, but this year it is in January. On January 8th, tip-off is at 7 p.m. This is at the Spectrum Center in Charlotte. You're going to want to check this out because you're getting greatly reduced ticket prices, plus a lot of cool activities, such as you get to shoot around, have a shoot around and games on the main and practice court for 3 hours. You can hold the American flag during the national anthem. You can stand next to players during the national anthem. You can participate in high-five cheer tunnels, get a free Hornets t-shirt, early VIP admissions. This is all a part of what you get when you sign up for NCHE Day with the Charlotte Hornets. They're going to be playing the Chicago Bulls. You're definitely going to want to check that out. Finally, in the news, I want to give you an update on the family from Germany, the homeschool family, the Romkes, who moved to the United States because they were not able to homeschool in Germany. And they came in 2008 to try to escape the fines and even the removal of their children from them because they wanted to homeschool. In January 26th of 2010, the immigration judge granted them asylum. However, it went to the 6th District Court, it went to the Supreme Court, and back and forth. But finally, in 2014, DHS let the Romkes stay under order of supervision and indefinite deterred action status. However, here's what's happened. On September 6th of this year, the Romkes were told that they had 4 weeks to secure passports and deport. They were completely devastated. They've been living here in the U.S. for all of this time, homeschooling in freedom, and now they were facing a threat to go back. And so HSLDA has been working with the Romkes to find a way. And fortunately, last month, October 11th, they got the deportation delayed for 1 year. It hasn't been permanently solved, but they're working on that to make sure that they can stay here. So this is an interesting story to keep up with. You can go find out more at hslda.com. We're going to have a link in the show notes for that. And you'll be able to support them in any way that you can and pray for them. All right, let's go to Homeschool Conversations, and we're going to play another portion of a conversation I had with Dr. Brian Ray from the National Home Education Research Institute. I love my annual conversation with him. And we go into what I would call the Wild West of education, you know, in a very interesting time when all sorts of different educational models are taking place. And homeschooling with hybrid and combining it with other things There just seems to be a lot of gray areas. And so we're going to discuss, what is homeschooling? How do we define homeschooling? How do researchers define homeschooling? What kind of research do we have about it? And how does it fit in all the new educational models popping up? So this is an important topic. I hope you'll enjoy it. Let's check it out.
So, you know, going back to worldview and philosophy, because I was talking about who homeschools and diversity and all those kinds of things. And people think we have all kinds of research in America on homeschooling. Well, compared to other nations, we do. But we still don't know everything. I mean, if I look back, I was just talking to somebody about this. If I look back 20 years ago, 25 years ago, from the data, I would tell the media, I would tell interviewers, maybe 80% of homeschool families would self-describe themselves as Bible-believing Christians. Like, we believe the Bible, we believe Jesus is God, He's the only way to heaven. I don't know what that is now. It might be, don't quote this, maybe it's 50%. I don't know. I really don't know. I've had stories from a lot of, you know, homeschool leaders like you that tell me, and some data, maybe it's changed that much. So that's a change. Now, another thing related to this whole idea of growth or diminishment, numbers and all that, I mentioned the different forms of education out there. And one of the challenges we have as researchers, and then again, if you want truth or the facts, well, what's a homeschooler? You know, what's a homeschooler? And now a lot of people know this. We had IDEA IDEA from Alaska 30-ish years ago. And as soon as that came out, that was a government-funded school at home. It almost demolished homeschooling, which is parent-directed, home-based education, and some would add private. You know, not government-funded, therefore no government strings. Well, in the last few years, now we have a lot of people talking about, you can see the newspaper articles all over the place, pods, micro-schools. Way back in the olden days, we called them dame schools, D-A-M-E, a lady, you know, who'd just have a collection of children at her house or something.
Okay.
And she'd teach them. Well, I don't know if anybody's using the word, but we have dame schools now where some lady or a man says, hey, I got a big house and 5 kids from there and 12 from there, and they come over to here and we do stuff. We have that now. And then we have something that even makes it, well, here's another term, hybrid homeschooling. And so, if you read Dr. Wern's book on hybrid homeschooling, there's another one, I can't remember the professor's name, and all these articles about hybrid homeschooling, and I'm not going to get too specific because I don't want to misrepresent anybody here, but you see these articles, and they'll say, and then such and such school does the this, and then next paragraph, some description, and the third paragraph, and such school does this, and oh, and by the way, in this one they wear uniforms, oh, and they go to this place, a building, 3 or 4 days a week. And then they call it hybrid homeschooling. It's not hybrid homeschooling, it's alternative schooling. And I think this is really important. Dr. McDill, that way back in the 70s and 60s, we had alternative schooling. That's not a new thing. We've had all these choices for all these years. And we had open schools and schools without walls. And over in England, they had Summerhill where some children could go, you know, running around naked or something. And you know, we've had alternative schooling for years. So I'm not really sure why those people want to put homeschooling as the noun and hybrid as the adjective. It's really not homeschooling. I mean, John Holt, who promoted home-based education, what we now call homeschooling, kind of on the secular pedagogy, he'd be rolling over in his grave to call that hybrid homeschooling.
And is the primary violation there of your definition home-based? Just in
no.
the sense that, because many would argue that even that hybrid model,
right.
that it's parent-directed.
The problem with it is this. You said definitions. Definitions are the key. Yeah.
Yep.
So there are a lot of ways to come up with a definition. One is historical. Like you could say, well, what's the definition of a household? Okay. Or you could say, what's the definition of a family, right? We're dealing with that in our culture. What's a family?
Yeah.
Well, everybody knew 20 years ago what a family was. It was a lady and a man and their children. You know,
yeah.
That was a family. So we have an historical way to define something. Now, homeschooling has been around long enough now that we have an historical sense of what it is, at least until a few years ago.
Yep.
And almost everybody knew a few years ago, homeschooling was parent-directed, home-based education. So it was not only at home. It was not only with mommy and daddy till the children were 25 years old, tied to their apron strings, but it was definitely directed and controlled by the parent. And it was mainly based out of the home. And of course, as children got older and older, they did more outside of the home. That was, everybody knew that. In pretty much all across the United States, it was privately funded. So now we also have definitions that researchers have to come up with. So if I'm a researcher and I want to study homeschoolers, then I'm interested in how are they doing academically, or how are they doing in terms of their social development, or how are they doing in terms of at what rate do they vote when they become adults, you know, whatever it is. When I categorize them, homeschool, public school, private school, if I operationally define it like I did historically, that's one thing. But if I operationally define it as, well, anybody who calls yourself a homeschooler is a homeschooler.
Yeah, that's different.
Now I don't know anything. Like,
and do you,
what was the treatment? What was the treatment?
All of the alternative approaches, do they end up kind of getting put into the private school bucket?
Okay, for me, and every researcher has a worldview, and every researcher has to come up with a definition. So when I do research, I would define it now, kind of, this is kind of weird to talk about because up until 40 years ago, homeschooling was almost extinct, right? And now, you know, by the year 2022, we knew what homeschooling was. It was pretty well agreed upon what homeschooling was. And now we're saying, uh-oh, what's the definition?
Yeah, so, a lot of blurry lines.
So as a researcher, I would pretty much stick with that conventional understood definition a couple of years ago. And somebody said, all right, but this family snuck into your study. So now what I have to do as a researcher, I have to ask more questions. Like, where's your, you came to this study because you said you're a homeschooler. So now I'm going to be asking questions of everybody in the study. Was any of it tax funded? How many days a week was your child at a place other than your home for maybe more than 2 hours per day? We have to ask more questions now to define it and sort it and split it and divvy it up when we do our statistical analysis. Yeah. We have to do all that as researchers, and unless you have another question, that leads me to something else.
Okay.
Okay. The other thing. So one of the things that muddies all of this is now, in this whole world of operational definition, we have people talking about tax-funded ESAs.
Yep.
Tax-funded educational savings accounts.
Because at some point you said privately funded.
Exactly.
Has been in the definition,
yes,
possibly.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Now, we don't have all day. So I will have to say, you know, in some other nations, there has been tax funding of some, what we call homeschooling. But that's not for right now. That's not for our conversation right now. In the U.S., it's vastly been privately funded, voluntary associations. But now with some of the states passing these bills, and I purposely say over and over again, tax-funded ESAs, tax-funded education savings accounts, some of that money now is flowing to people who call themselves homeschoolers or who the law might still say are homeschoolers.
And just to specify, here in North Carolina, we had at least three or four versions of bills that were including, for example, what they called opportunity scholarships, different kinds of scholarships, but it ended up being the same idea. We are trying to get tax money to students.
Right.
And many of them have been conservatives who are thinking, well, these guys are paying taxes and it's going to the students. Well, we should also go to the homeschool students.
Right.
And so none of those have succeeded yet.
Mm-hmm.
The new ones, but.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes, and I just said right as in I understand, not right as in
that's the right thing.
Agreement or that it's a good thing philosophically, but we'll just finish as a researcher. That just makes it more complicated. And research, of course, doesn't make values statements, but we have to be careful as we define our terms. And so I would say that to any researcher, whether you're a master's degree student, a doctoral student, a professor, some academic, some think tank,
you've got to be really careful now when you talk about homeschooling, because even people, families who are engaged in, have their children in a place 4 days a week in a uniform, they're calling themselves homeschoolers. That is not much different from institutionalized schooling. So we've got to be really careful as a researcher.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, it raises, you know, you kind of alluded to that when you said, hey, there's money there, so maybe why not just give it to homeschoolers also?
Yeah.
So that raises the philosophical, theoretical discussion, which I think is really important for people to think about.
Okay, now it's time for some wisdom from the Word. My 15-year-old is now in the driving stage where we have to get those 60 hours of practice time. And so me and my wife are always riding with her and she's driving, and you know sometimes how nerve-wracking that is. One very important word in the context of driving is yield. You have to yield. You have to yield to oncoming traffic. One of the amazing situations is when a teenager is trying to pull onto a highway, right? That's pretty interesting. They have to yield. Someone has to yield. If a car is coming down the highway and you're coming onto the highway, somebody's going to have to yield or there's going to be a serious problem. And I want to talk about the word submission today, which I think yield in the traffic context, it's helpful to understand that when two people disagree or their wills cross, someone is going to have to submit or yield to the other, or there's going to be a fight. Submission is a very important topic in Scripture, and it's one of the keys, not only to our relationship with God, but today we're specifically going to talk about how we relate to other people. And this is something that, of course, in a homeschool and in a discipleship context, we want to teach our children in their relationships to others, when is the right time to submit. Now, as you know, sometimes it's not the right time to submit. And of course, we need to talk about that too. But today we're going to talk about when is the right time to submit. And there are at least three, correct times, or based on biblical principles, the times we should submit. Love, truth, and authority. So let's start with love. And that's pretty simple. And that is one of the ways that we submit to others is when we are doing what's best for them, when we deny ourselves. And instead of putting ourselves first, we're doing what is good for someone else. Now, that doesn't mean we're making them happy, but it does mean that we're putting someone else in front of ourselves. We know that in Philippians 2, verses 3 and 4, it talks about having an attitude of humility and considering others better than yourself, and not looking to our own interests, but to the interests of others. And this is what we would call love and caring about other people. So this is certainly one of the ways that we want to teach our kids to put others first. Is when we can put our own interests behind something that's good for somebody else. The second is truth. And we know that in Ephesians 4, we are to speak the truth to one another in love. And we also know from Matthew 18 that if someone sins against you, you're supposed to go and tell your brother what he's done. This is the process of Christians speaking truth to each other. And God makes it clear that we are actually held responsible for the truth that someone else speaks to us. Now, it's hard sometimes to hear the truth from other people, but the reality is when someone else comes to us and speaks truth to us, our responsibility is to submit. That is a good time to submit when someone is speaking truth. The third is authority. The Bible tells us that in this life, there are different structures of authority. For example, in a marriage, the husband is called to lead the wife. In a family, the parents are called to lead the children. They're to obey their parents. In a church, the elders are called to lead the congregation. The government has a responsibility and authority, even employees. And so here are situations in which we want to understand, we want to teach our children that there are times that it's a right time for them, even if they don't want to, even if their desire and their will is contrary, that they are to follow their leaders, or that they're to submit to the authority in their lives. Again, this is a deep topic, and there are times that we don't do that because we're following the Lord. However, you have to stop and think. All of these things are really countercultural. You know, for example, our culture really values self-gratification. You know, and that's perfectly contrary to love. Our culture does not value truth. It values subjectivity and claims that there really is no truth. And so, you know, certainly someone couldn't come tell you truth that you didn't know or that you would need to deal with. And of course, another great value of our culture is autonomy, personal autonomy, in the sense that no one can tell me what to do. And we don't like to acknowledge the authority in our lives. Teaching our children to live from a biblical worldview, which includes submission, is very countercultural, but it's also important. Imagine a life that has the peace and the joy and the freedom that comes from godly submission. So keep these in mind for your own relationships and the culture and relationships of your family, and keep them in mind as you're discipling your children.
Welcome to Homeschool Helps with Amanda. I'm Amanda Wares, Homeschool Helps Director with NCHE. So today we are going to tackle a topic that is one that is commonly faced by homeschool families, by homeschool parents, but is not so commonly talked about. And that is homeschooling while dealing with mental health challenges. And that is whether you, the parent, are dealing with mental health issues or whether you are homeschooling a student dealing with mental health issues. We don't talk about that very often as homeschool parents, but it is a common theme that I see, that I get emails and phone calls about, that I see out on the internet, on social media. People say, you know, my child has severe anxiety and I'm now homeschooling. What do I do? How do we do this? How do we navigate homeschooling while dealing with mental health challenges as well? So I don't have all the answers. I can tell you that I personally have had clinical depression for most of my adult life. And so for the 19 years that we've homeschooled, I have homeschooled also while dealing with depression myself. And several of my children also have various mental health issues that they deal with. So we have experienced it. We have gone down this road. I hope I can encourage you. I hope I can help during this segment. So first off, if you, as the homeschool parent, are dealing with mental health challenges, what do you do? What do you do? So I have a couple of tips that I have found helpful. First off, do take care of yourself. Do. It is already a challenge to homeschool. It is impossible to homeschool if you're not healthy yourself, as the parent, as the homeschool teacher. So please take care of yourself. If that looks like finding a good counselor, if that looks like finding a good psychiatrist, whatever that looks like, please do it. Do take time to take care of yourself. Exercise, that is so important in mental health. Eat correctly, all those things. You know, it's so easy to focus so hard on the homeschooling that you forget about taking care of yourself as the homeschool teacher, but that's really important. Next, something I found really helpful as a homeschool parent who also deals with depression is I chose a curriculum that is very low prep. It is very laid out. So even if I was having a terrible day and couldn't make any decisions, didn't feel like I could think really, I could open up that teacher's manual and it would tell me exactly what to do step by step. Here, read this chapter of this book. Here, do this worksheet, whatever it is. I found that extremely helpful over the years. And it also helped, even if I was having bad days, even if my kids were having bad days, to lend some consistency and routine to our life, which was immensely helpful over the years, no matter what, if we were having great days or if we were having terrible days, having that consistency of the open and go curriculum was super helpful for us. Next, I strongly encourage you to have as many systems, as many routines set up as possible. And this is helpful both for you as the homeschool parent, if you're dealing with mental health issues, and for your student, if they're dealing with mental health issues. Have as many systems, as many routines, so that if there are bad days, you're not in the place of having to make decisions when it feels too hard to make decisions. So meal plans, definitely. Daily routines, definitely. So helpful. Now, one other little tip is change the venue. I have found this really helpful if my kids are having a terrible day, and it really does help just to move. Go to the park. You can do school at the park. Go to the library. You can do school at the library. Sometimes just that little change is enough to lift the mood to get school done that day. Last but not least, if need be, don't be afraid to just take a day. Take a day off. Just go do what you need to do. Rest, recoup, whatever it is. But it is easy to fall into the trap if you do allow yourself to take those mental health days, to take those rest days. Don't fall into the trap of it becoming over and over and over. So it's really easy to be like, oh, I need a mental health day. 100%. That is important. But if it turns into a mental health week or a mental health month, that's probably not a good thing. So I really want to encourage you. You are not alone. There are so many families out there that are dealing with mental health issues, either for their students or for themselves or both. You are not alone. So I really hope this helps today.
Well, we really want to thank you for joining us this week. We'd love to hear from you. You can write us at thehomeschoolshow@nchu.com. Let us know if you have any questions or comments. And as usual, we would love if you would share this show with others that you think would be helpful for them. And until next week, continue to homeschool with confidence and joy.